Hey there, folks. This is Carl Castaneda, and this is my conversation with Graham Devine, who is a guy who's been in the industry forever. You know, he worked on games like Halo Wars, the legendary The Seventh Guest, just tons and tons of games throughout like 25 years. But the reason why we're talking to him is that this is the inaugural iteration of my new column here at Nintendo World Report, Reset Button, in which I track down creators of very, very old games and talk to them about what their experience was like and basically what their about their history in the gaming industry. And so, yeah, this is my first one with the developer of The Silver Surfer for the NES, a notoriously difficult game. So yeah, enjoy the interview. This is me with Graham Devine. First off, let's just get it right on into it. It's 1990 or maybe even 1989 before this game is being developed. Where are you career-wise?
I am at Mastertronic in Southern California.
Okay.
The 8-bit Nintendo has just come out, and Martin Alper, who ran Mastertronic and Arcadia, who published Silver Surfer, told me he could get any license I wanted at all. Which license did I want to get in order to make a game? Because Batman had just come out from Sunsoft, and
right.
He thought the licenses were huge.
So you requested Silver Surfer?
Nope, I asked for The Simpsons.
Oh, wow, that's really left field.
And because Simpsons had just started, and at my house we hosted a Simpsons party every week.
Right.
And so I'm like, this Simpsons thing is going to be huge.
And sure enough it was with those arcade games.
But Martin, and he did not agree that it was going to be huge.
Wow.
And he did not, he thought it was going to be a passing fad and to go find another one. So the next one I came up with was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You're kidding.
Because I collected comic books. And
So
comic books were huge, and there was Boris the Bear and Teenage Turtles had just started, and I was really into those kind of non-mainstream comics at the time.
Right.
And Teenage Turtles was at that point incredibly violent. And
yeah, wasn't Frank Miller working on them at the time?
No, it wasn't Frank Miller. It was what's their names?
I might have to look at Wikipedia for this.
Yeah, that's going to have to be Wikipedia.
But I've been trying to actually track those down. I haven't read them in forever, but no, those were fantastic.
Yeah, those were just, and I was like, you want what?
Exactly. No, that's so funny that The Simpsons turned down because it wasn't going to be popular. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not mainstream enough. That's crazy, man.
So then we went with Silver Surfer.
so your third choice was Silver Surfer then?
Mobius had just done a graphic novel on Silver Surfer, and Mobius is one of my favorite artists. And
right. He's huge.
He'd just done a Silver Surfer book, and I'm like, "Well, the Silver Surfer character is fantastic. Let's see what we can do around him."
Yeah, I was actually curious why Silver Surfer was picked, because I'm thinking, in my mind, Silver Surfer doesn't become a huge character until after Infinity Gauntlet, Jim Starlin's. Run on it in back in the, I think it was like 93, 94, maybe even 95. And so, I was kind of curious about why Silver Surfer was the one license that, you would want from Marvel. But I'm actually curious, what was it like working with Marvel?
Marvel itself was actually great to work with. They provided a lot of, they provided a lot of concept art, a lot of detail on the character, and I can't remember what actually the approval process was like, if it was...
I was curious if they had any, strange requests, or any limitations that they put on the development, as far as, you can't use these characters, or you can't have a character depicted in a certain way. I mean, obviously, it's the NES, you're not going to exactly have them, with these really advanced animations, but I was curious if they had any weird requests as far as the game development went.
I don't think they did. As a sideline, another game I did back then, 7-Up Spot, had a weird request of the union, the 7-Up company union, of truck drivers had to approve the game.
Really?
That was a weird one.
So you had truck drivers playing the game and deciding if it was...
Well, the union chief, or the son of the union chief, I guess.
that is odd.
But anyway, Silver Surfer, I remember Marvel licensing just being... you know, obviously
accommodating.
Done a lot of games at that point, and they were pretty accommodating.
Oh, that's great. No, I mean, I know, you know, later on, because I mean, I've always been a really big fan of Marvel's video games. I mean, I really came in with the Genesis, you know, like Separation Anxiety, all the Spider-Man games, later on with the Marvel Versus titles. And I mean, no, with Silver Surfer, I mean, that had to have been one of their first or one of their earlier tie-in games or license games.
I can't think, I mean, of any games before then that were really licensed. I mean,
this was 1990, so this is, you know, before they had their whole Genesis boom.
Yeah, there was no Spider-Man games or anything really. I mean, licensed games were just starting to become big, but it was, you know, that was, it was really just the Mobius.
That's what it attracted you to the character?
That's what attracted me, you know, which was... that was definitely what attracted me to, you know, towards that character.
Mm-hmm. And so basically you were offered to, you know, pick any license that doesn't happen to be The Simpsons or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because that could never succeed.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, you went with Silver Surfer. And so he's basically just offered to you, like, you know, this is, you know, pick a game to direct, or were you going to have a different role at first, or then you just became a director, or how did that work exactly?
I think director is a very strong term. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was... in the very direction that we had from was, you know, this is a Barton Fink moment of
okay,
make it a shooter.
Well, and a shooter it was. You know, one of my questions here is, why is this game so hard? I saw it. The reason that you know I put this together and all is because I was at PAX East a few weeks ago, and you know, like I said, I'm a big fan of these Marvel games. I had never seen Silver Surfer before, and my introduction to this game is to a dozen people lined up to play it, so that's just to see who can beat the first level without dying.
Yeah, it's...
It is a ridiculously hard game. Why was it so hard?
It's possibly a design flaw.
Okay.
In all honesty. Mm-hmm. It should not be that hard.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's the only person I know who's actually beaten it, and he only beat it because he had the limited lives cheat.
Oh, there's also the slow cheat that you can do as well. With the whatever controller it was for the NES that slowed down games by just pausing and unpausing them very quickly, and that worked as well.
Okay.
But the ability to die from a single shot or to die from touching a single object, that's
that was a challenge.
In the game that was our probably the biggest influence at the time was the Ninja Gaiden game that just came out for Nintendo and was was also insanely hard, and I guess we must have been really good at playing games back then.
Maybe we've all just gotten, you know, soft in our old age. But so, what was actually the biggest challenge working on the game, if you can recall?
Software Creations in Britain worked on the actually made the game and actually designed the game, and they made a lot of 8-bit Nintendo games back then, and they were a fairly big house for doing games on the 8-bit Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed, quite rightly so, for probably Silver Surfer to have an RPG game made instead of a shooter game.
Really?
Which would have been fantastic, I think. You know, as I said, Barton Fink was it was destined to be a shooter game and an RPG game, and
that's really interesting.
And so there was no contention, but there was interesting discussion as to the concept of the Silver Surfer and whether he would actually be a shooter in real life or whether he was the Herald of Galactus and would actually interact with these characters and talk to them, and it was a dilemma for them because they were also huge comic book fans, and just and for me in retrospective, just making a Silver Shooter into someone who just shoots laser beams is
it's a bit of a downgrade, I guess.
It's a bit of a downgrade for him because he's got angst over everyone he kills.
Oh, of course, yeah.
This would be like an angst meter there.
Exactly. I don't know if you've actually ever read Silver Surfer Requiem. It came out, I think it was must have been about 5 or 6 years ago for Marvel Knights. It's if you're into the angsty Silver Surfer, that is the series to get. I'm telling you. It wasn't Landrin who worked on that one, but it was a very similar artist who worked on it. But actually, I was doing a little bit of research on the game, and apparently there's a lot of speculation as to who the final boss actually is in this game.
Oh.
I've never actually seen the final boss because I'm not good enough at the game to get there. So I'm just going to ask you, is that blurry figure at the end, in fact, Mr. Sinister?
Oh, I remember some of this.
Yeah. Was that Mr. Sinister?
You know, my memory is a little blurry on that.
We'll never know. Oh, God.
Because
apparently the sprite next to his life bar looks a little bit like, you know, Mr. Sinister, but, you know, it's not exactly high def, so you can't really tell.
That's... You know, I should have looked over anything I had. Yeah, because there's no emails.
right.
There's facts.
But facts. No, it's interesting, you know, because I was looking through the list of bosses and such, and you saw people like Fire Lord, and I think there was a Skrull in there.
Yep.
And because when I first saw it, I was like, I saw Fire Lord, and I was thinking, oh, you're going to be fighting the former Heralds of Galactus. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool idea. And then I saw that there's just a kind of a scattered species list from the Marvel U. And I saw that, I think there was one, it was a reptile. I'm not sure I'm familiar with that character.
We picked them all from the current comic books that were out.
Okay.
So there was some of them may have been from the Mobius comic book.
Mm-hmm.
What was that called? The Parable?
Oh, yeah.
That was probably a little bit out of canon.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense, I suppose.
And then what was the...
I'm trying to think. I remember the Skrull King specifically, and I remember seeing the reptile. I'm trying to think. There were a couple others.
Yeah, I remember the fire. There was Fire Lord there, and there was.
And I also thought that something that was really interesting was it's kind of like Mega Man, where you can pick which level you want to go to first.
Yes.
Which I thought was an interesting touch, also. At the time, that was really uncommon. I think.
I think that was just we were straight. We were just straight influenced by so many of the games. I mean, games did not take four years to make back then. So when a game takes 6 months to make, you just go in with what's currently feeling shiny to you, and you finish it.
Right. Is that about how long it took to make it? About 6 months?
I think it took slightly longer than 6 months. I think it took 9 months to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we also, some of those last 3 months, were trying to get all the graphics in, because on the 8-bit Nintendo, there's three memory controller chips, an MMC1, MMC2, and MMC3.
Right.
And this one was an MMC1 game when it started, and by the time we finished, it was an MMC3 game.
Oh, wow. So that must have been kind of hard to get over there.
And that was that made it expensive to produce as well.
Right.
So there was a lot of internal angst over whether it was actually... worthy of the MMC3, and it's so expensive to produce.
Now I'm actually curious, since you bring up models and such. You've been working in the industry for such a long time. You've worked on a ton of different systems and ton of different games. I'm just curious. Looking back on your time developing on the NES, how was it as far as a development experience?
The only game I developed myself was 7-Up Spot.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, at that point, Mastertronic was not a Nintendo licensee.
Mm.
So they gave me a badly photocopied set of Japanese instruction manuals.
Oh, God.
Complete with stains on them and half-folded pages. The Super Mario cartridge with the ability to put ROMs inside, a ROM burner, and some EEPROMs.
Wow.
Told me to go figure it out.
Very homebrew.
So it was literally homebrew.
Yeah.
Soldering irons. And we figured it out and made something that works on made 8-bit Nintendo. And then they took that to Nintendo and said, look, we can make cartridges. And that's how they got their license. David Nintendo was actually, it was kind of fun to work on because it had all these limitations with banks and sprites and so forth. But it was very much on the fly 6502 assembly.
Right. I know a lot of developers have talked about, you know, that with the NES, you know, you creativity bred from limitation.
Yeah, I mean, you would actually think about code in terms of, you could only have, I think, 4 kilobytes or 16 kilobytes of code available to you at one point in time, so you had to literally flip pages, and when you flip the page, your code had to continue to execute at the same spot. So your level information, and your graphics information had to be within that current bank. So if you were you only had so many banks to put in the cartridge, so you had to decide, how am I going to just store the level on this bank, and where the graphics going to go, where's the code going to go, and how am I going to flip? And it was, there was a lot of creativity around that.
That's really interesting. Now, what was the, you know, obviously this was a long, long time ago, so I'm not sure if you recall, but what was the reception of the game as far as sales? Like, how did the game do?
I don't think it did as well as Arcadia would have liked it to have done. Mm-hmm. I think probably Silver Surfer, not a well-known character at the time.
Right. certainly not as mainstream as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and yes. Simpsons would one day become.
But, you know, I think as far as Arcadia went, it was a good introduction to licensing for them. And I can't remember how the reception was.
I mean, obviously it must have been held up in some regard. Or I mean, it's built up a bit of a cult following.
I was just looking that up over the weekend, actually.
When I started doing more and more research on this game, apparently this is held up in high regard among these, like, really hardcore NES players.
It's funny, there's that whole super, super hardcore Japanese subculture around levels that just spray bullets at you.
Oh yeah, the whole bullet hell phenomena, you know, it's really interesting how Silver Surfer, this game that, you know, you claim it's a design flaw, how difficult it is, turns out that's exactly what people want now.
Yeah, that's it's funny, there aren't too many American games that, that actually can claim that.
Oh, definitely, no, it's definitely an achievement, and I'm telling you, we were at PAX and we saw... this woman eventually beat it, and the prize was something small. I think it was like an apple or like a pin or some sort. But the look of elation on her face, having finally beaten this level, was something to see. I can tell you. I mean, I'll tell you. I sat down. I was probably dead within about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I got to see if there's YouTube on that.
But I'm curious. You know, I checked out, obviously, I did some research as far as what you've done since, and so I know you worked at id and Activision for a while.
Activision was id's publisher, so I was the main designer on Quake 3, and then I did some programming on Doom 3, and then right after Silver Surfer, I probably left and did Seventh Guest and Eleventh Hour.
Which is, of course, you know, the legendary Seventh Guest, this huge, I mean, apparently the Seventh Guest is not single-handedly, but one of the reasons that the CD drive became so popular.
Yes.
Because people had to play the Seventh Guest. I mean, that must be a pretty amazing achievement.
Well, that was... Definitely, it was another of those things where I went to Marson and said, hey, you know, this CD-ROM thing is going to be huge.
Mm. I'm telling you, man, you really had a good knack for picking out what was going to be popular.
But he actually fired me over that, because he told me, hey, the CD-ROM thing is never going to take off. It's always going to be floppy disks. But tell you what, you go do this, but you go do this on your own. I'm going to fire you to go do it.
Amazing.
So we got fired, and then we got to make the game.
Wow. So what would you say, you know, since then, what would you say are some highlights? You know, after Silver Surfer, I mean, I know you worked at Ensemble for a while on Halo Wars.
Halo Wars was a 4.5 year odyssey. It was.
that game was announced. I think like what was it, 2 years or 3 years before it was released?
I think maybe 2 years before it was. Mm-hmm. Because it was announced at X06 mm-hmm. and came out in 2009. Yeah, so wow.
I mean, but you were on Ensemble for a while. I mean, I think you developed a few games with them before Halo Wars.
Yeah, I worked on Age of Empires 3, so...
Okay, well, there you go. That is so you have a mighty pedigree, I gotta say.
And I was in the game industry for 10 years before I made Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking up, apparently your first game, according to Moby Games at least, was Excel?
Yes, that's true, probably.
On the Amstrad CPC, which I have to admit I've never heard of, and the ZX Spectrum, which, you know, obviously...
Oh, no, Excel was not my first one. Excel was like... way into my... Actually, Firebirds was my first one on the Sinclair Spectrum. And then back in the 70s, I wrote one called Space Trash 3D on the TRS-80. Mm-hmm. Then I worked for at Atari Soft, and I did ports of Pole Position. Mm-hmm. And Bolt Laser, and wow. Then I formed my own company, and my own company's first game was Excel, which was we did on the Spectrum and then on the Amstrad, and it was a fun game.
So what are you up to these days?
Well, now I'm at Apple.
I start working for iPhone Game Technologies, I understand.
I can't talk about that.
I thought that might be a little bit more hush-hush. Apple's not as free with their you know, there are a lot of NDAs in that building, I understand.
Yes.
We have to speak in hushed voices while we talk about it. All right, well, thank you so much for doing the interview. You know, I really appreciate it, taking some time out of your very busy schedule at Apple to talk to us. But yes, thank you so much for talking. And Silver Surfer, hard as it is actually a pretty great game. So I got to say, really good job on that.
Great to be talking about it 20 years later.
I am curious, when was the last time you actually played it?
You know, I collect old video game systems, so I think I hooked up my NES when I was moving house maybe two houses ago. So probably 2008 would be probably the last time I played all my games, because I wanted to show my daughter all the games I've worked on over the years. So I still have a Silver Surfer cartridge. Mint in box.
Mint in box, all right. All right, well, thank you so much for talking to us, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
All right, have a good one.
Bye-bye.